Something you know about Timothy. Something you know about Timothy. In the Bible, what's the first thing you think about? Yes, ma'am. To my son, Timothy, and it wasn't that Paul, it wasn't a biological thing, it was a spiritual thing, okay? What else? Timothy, what do you think about Timothy? What did he do? What was his specialty? Greg. What I think of when I think of Timothy is that statement that Paul made. He says, I have no man like-minded who will care for your estate, talking about Timothy. He says, for all seek their own and not the things that are Christ's. In other words, Timothy was a young man that was interested first and foremost in serving the Lord, and more than serving himself, and seeking things of the Lord instead of seeking things for himself. We do know he traveled around because we see him in the Bible in different places. So he wasn't particularly a pastor in one place. He wasn't particularly a missionary. If you think of a missionary in the way we think of it, as to someone that goes and starts a church, we think of him more as someone that was an evangelist, maybe, that would go to the churches later and preach. Or he was just Paul's right-hand man. And so this is interesting what Paul says to him, because Timothy now is kind of, as kind of Greg pointed out, he's on his own a little bit more. He's not traveling with Paul. He is being given instructions by Paul, who anticipates that he's going to go and be with the Lord pretty quick. And so he says to Timothy some things that Timothy must apply. And in this case, it certainly pertains to an individual church, like our church or another church where Timothy might be either be serving or by helping. And specific instructions here. So in chapter 5 and verse 1, he says, rebuke not an elder, but entreat him as a father, and the younger men as brethren, the elder women as mothers, the younger as sisters with all purity. And then we'll stop right there and break this down. I'm just going to look at those first two verses to begin with. This fifth chapter, almost in its entirety, has a lot to say, the first half of it at least, down through verse 17 and even past that. But it has to do with older folks. And the elder in 1 Timothy 5:1 is not a pastor. We sometimes call pastors, or can be called elders perhaps, or church officers. These are just older folks. Just older folks. And the idea is that Timothy's given some instructions on how to approach some specific categories of older folks, and we'll break those down. And so the first one is regarding, I use the word paternal, because he makes that statement. He says that you should entreat him as a father. The elder in 1 Timothy 5:1, not a pastor, an older person. Now the word rebuke, have you ever been rebuked? Ever had your boss rebuke you? I had a job a long time ago in Salt Lake City. This would have been 87 probably was the year this happened. And I was very zealous, and I was working for this company, and I could see what they were doing wrong, and I wanted them to fix it because I could see they had an opportunity. And I was driving people crazy because I kept telling them, do it this way, do it this way, do it this way, and I was making people mad. And one day, the fellow that owned the company, who made some really bad choices in life, and that's another story, but he said, hey, let's go for a walk. And we walked out the front door of the office building and turned around the corner and went up into a neighborhood and walked on down the sidewalk in the neighborhood. And he gave me a kind of a lecture, and the gist of it was, you need to calm down a little bit and not be so hard on everybody, because they're doing the best they can. And he chastened me. He rebuked me a little bit, but he was very kind about it. I was in the Army. They were not very kind about the rebuke. I remember one captain in Georgia, Fort Benning, a captain at Fort Benning. He was not very kind when he chastened me or rebuked me. But there's a right way and a wrong way to correct folks, isn't there? And sometimes folks need to be corrected. But you can do more harm than good, can't you? Especially if you're a young man trying to correct a much older man. So what a great picture he has here, talking about treating him as a father. Just to get a clear understanding of the word rebuke, the Greek word literally means to smite upon somebody. It doesn't have to be that we correct physically, but can't you smite folks with your words if you're not careful? He says, let's get the verse right. He says, rebuke not an elder. So he says, don't smite them with your words. There's another way to do it. And he uses this illustration. I want to just clear up rebuke. Peter rebuked the Lord Jesus Christ, according to Matthew 16:21. Luke 17:3 teaches us to rebuke a brother who trespasses against us. And 1 Timothy 5:20 says, them that sin rebuke before all, that others may fear. Jesus told the church of Laodicea, as many as I love, I rebuke and chasten. So there is a time for rebuke, isn't there? And we probably all can think of some time in our life when someone who, for the right reason, came to us and said, you did that wrong. I used to be a member of a church in Texas called Levon Drive Baptist Church, 1,500 members. The pastor, Gary Coleman, was a very famous, well-known man, Southwide Baptist Fellowship. I think he was an officer in that and just had a lot of experience. And he preached all over the country. He was a good guy. And so this fellow in the church that ran the youth department was named Denny Smith. And Denny Smith was our Sunday school teacher when we were there back in 91, 92. And so he took all the teenagers to Six Flags Over Texas. And when he came back, he left one there. and so I'm hearing this story after the fact. It's you can laugh once that's over, right? When it happens, it's not funny at all. And you're panicking and all the rest and wondering what's happening. And so the pastor told me this story. I was his visitation partner. So every Monday night, he and I'd go out visiting together for about a year or so. And he said to me, he said, you know, when he did that, I told him, I'm going to have to hurt you on this one a little bit. I'm going to have to sting you a little bit. I'm going to have to rebuke you. That's bad. Don't do that again. That could terrible circumstances could result. And they didn't in that case. But there's a time for a rebuke. We agree? But now you have to ask the question, who's eligible for that rebuke? Today, some people are reluctant to rebuke anyone for anything. In other words, Greg mentioned this morning when we prayed. There has to be a time when somebody stands up and says, that's wrong, don't do it. But that hurts. When you say you smite upon somebody, that's the meaning of the word. And people don't like that. People like to be told good things, don't they? People like to be patted on the back. So, unfortunately, it's an easy trap to fall into. A lot of churches today just tell folks all the good stuff. And they just don't want to rebuke because they don't want to run anybody off or offend anybody. Would you agree with me that when someone cares enough to tell you that you're wrong, that's a valuable thing to have in your life? In other words, if somebody won't tell you when they see you doing wrong things, this morning it was a small thing, but John came in and his collar was not right. And I just wanted to help the guy, you know. I just wanted to help. I've done that before. Have you ever seen somebody, my wife will remember this, like I get my collar up and I forget. And, you know, you want to, and so it's just a little thing, but you say, hey, let me help you with this. Let's fix it up right. Did I get it? Yeah. And when we work with folks, sometimes we have to tell them, you could do better. Now, I have to ask us all the question, and I can ask myself as well, are we able to accept it when someone rebukes us? It's hard, isn't it? In the military, you don't have a choice. And it's kind of handy in a way, because as an officer, I was a lieutenant in the Army, and if I had an enlisted man, even a senior NCO, and they didn't do something right, there's a culture in the military that lets you correct people without someone thinking that you're trying to get even with them if you do it right. But in churches, that culture seems to be gone. So that when we correct folks in church, they think, oh, you're being mean to me. Oh, you're not treating me fair. I don't want to hear that. We ought to be eligible. We ought to be able to listen to that, shouldn't we? But there's a way to do it. And that's what he says to Timothy. He says, you're not to rebuke those that are elderly. In other words, you're not going to smite upon them. You're not going to come to them and just say you're wrong, which it's hard to say that tactfully. He says, entreat him as a father. They're to deal with them the same way you deal with a father. So how would you deal with a father who was out of order? What are some things you would, I'll just name one of them. You'd use respect, wouldn't you? Amen? What else would you use? Okay, good. Exactly. You're doing it with love, and so you let that love meter your words and measure your words. And what else? Respect, love, what else? Exactly. Exactly. I see something, and I want to let you know, and it's hard to say, and sometimes you have to pray for the Lord to give you wisdom, don't you? So Paul doesn't say that he can't talk to these older folks. He says, but don't rebuke them. Treat them like you would treat a father. I'm trying to think of any time in my life I ever had to. My father just really didn't need that, I guess. You know, there were a couple of things he was doing I didn't agree with, but at the time I did not talk to him about it. But if I was going to talk to my father about something he had done wrong, I'd be very gentle, very humble, very respectful. I would make sure that he understood that I loved him. That's why I'm saying it. And so it's a dangerous thing, a delicate thing, I should say, isn't it? And it kind of sets the stage for what's coming later in this passage, because there's a certain way you deal with folks that are older than you are. He says, now, let's just think about this in another angle. What about younger men? How do you rebuke them? What's the first verse say? Treat them like a brother. When you grew up, you all grew up in church, right? You grew up in church, Greg? No, you didn't grow up in Lutheran church. Okay, anybody here grew up in a Baptist church besides me? Okay. Okay, Mark, when you were in your 20s, was it true that everyone would call other people brother so-and-so, brother so-and-so? I don't know where that came from necessarily, but I've done it my whole life. I just make the assumption that's the way you do it. It's sort of like praying in the Lord's name. Sometimes we do that out of habit. But how do you deal with, you got a brother, he's younger than you are. Did you beat him up when he was little? No. Good. Okay. Did he ever beat you up? No. So how do you correct a brother differently than you'd correct somebody at work? Like, you got somebody working with you at work and he's lazy, you say, hey, knock it off. But is there something different you'd do with your brother? You realize you have a permanent relationship here. And so you're going to work within the bounds of that relationship. We have a permanent relationship. Now, I've had instances, this is tough. When we were in Maryland, we had a staff, the 40 or so people, depending upon the year. And every now and then, we had a teacher that would make a really bad mistake. And they would, I could just tell story after story after story. But anyway, it's hard to correct somebody, because there are times when you correct people and they reject that and they reject you. And I've seen that happen too. But if we first realize we have a permanent relationship, now I'm working within the bounds of that relationship. I'm not going to say something unkind because we're going to be together for a long time. You and your brother will be there for life. And so you're not going to say something to him that's going to drive him away or alienate him. But at the same time, you're going to say something. You want to help him. And that's what he says here. We got to consider more than, this gets good. More than correcting the offense, we need to make sure we maintain the relationship. I know of a situation right now. I can't tell you the whole story for the sake of time, but it's happening in Salt Lake City. And oh, what a mess. It all started when a young pastor violently and without regard to this verse smote upon with words an older pastor. That's what started the whole thing. And I know the man, I know both the men that were involved, and the older pastor should have been treated like a father. But the younger pastor was proud, and the younger pastor was power hungry. Sad to say it, but it's true sometimes. And the younger pastor went after this man with a violent vengeance and called him names and yelled at him. And the older pastor realized something. This fellow's out of order. And it ultimately resulted in a church split. And then another man did the same thing, and that split the church again. And so now in Salt Lake City, the church that I used to go to is now three churches. And there's all these accusations flying back and forth and anger. And it all started because a man didn't pay attention to 1 Timothy 5:1, and he treated an older pastor the wrong way. And by the way, in that case, he was an older man and an elder. He was a pastor. And the fellow disregarded that. And I just got to say, when you step into eternity, the damage you have done is not going to be forgotten. There's going to be some people up there that are going to lose reward because they've done some damage that they could have avoided if they'd listened to the Bible. So treat the older men like fathers, the younger men like brothers, Timothy. And then he goes on. He talks about the elder women in verse 2, as mothers, the younger as sisters, with all purity is important there. But we deal with folks based on that long-term relationship. And it ought to be a long-term relationship. Sometimes people leave churches because somebody hurt my feelings. And, you know, people are going to hurt your feelings. But you ought to be someone that can forgive and make things right and move on. So anyway, first thing regarding the paternal, rebuke them or correct them in a particular way. And then remember, we are family. We treat each other that way. And these relationships don't end because of a disagreement or a failure. And when you are a family, we are to be close and to relish that closeness and to maintain it. So I find that those two verses very interesting in the Bible, very practical. Disregarding them can cause an enormous amount of trouble. Now, let's look at 1 Timothy chapter 5 and verse 3. And there is a word there. It's the word honor. Keep your finger here and go to Mark chapter 7. Mark chapter 7. Honor thy father and thy mother. We're familiar with that verse, aren't we? We tend to think of the word honor in a way of, for example, if someone was going to be recognized for their accomplishments, we would honor them with a reward. We would maybe have them have a special service for them and give them a medal or a trophy or a certificate or something like that. We used to have a youth group in Salt Lake City that had competition in Bible quizzing every month. And at the end of the year, we would recognize the students that were the top quizzers for the year. And we'd have a banquet and we'd have some trophies. And actually, for the end of the year, what we'd do is we'd give them a Bible if they were one of the top five quizzers, and some very nice Bibles, you know, $50 Bible, $75 Bible. And we'd do something to recognize that they were extraordinary. This word honor here, just mark it down, it has to do with provision. It has to do with meeting needs, and I just go ahead and use the word money, but it's just meeting their needs, their financial needs. And look what explains it here in Mark chapter 7. He says in verse 8, the Lord's talking to the Pharisees here, I believe it is. He says, laying aside the commandments of God, ye hold the tradition of men, as the washing of pots and cups and many other such things like you do. And he said unto them, full well, ye reject the commandment of God, that ye may keep your own tradition. For Moses said, honor thy father and thy mother, and whoso curseth father or mother, let him die the death. But ye say, if a man shall say to his father or mother, it is Corban, that is to say, it is a gift, by whatsoever there mightest be profited by me, he shall be free. Now, what they were doing is they were saying, I don't have I can't give this money to you because it was given to me as a gift, and so I can't continue, I can't give it to you, I need to keep it and recognize that gift. Or they might say, I can't give it to you because it belongs to God and it shouldn't be yours. They were finding excuses not to take care of their parents is what it was. And you're going to see as he goes through this, it's very significant, and I'm trying not to be long-winded about it, but the children are responsible for caring for their parents, meeting their parents' needs. What's funny to me is, in our society, we've almost forgotten that. It's not funny, it's sad. In Thailand, if you lived in Thailand and you're over the age of 50 and you're trying to find a job, good luck. They just won't hire you. That's not a problem, though, because in Thailand, the children provide for the parents. And so a lot of us here are over 50. If you're over 50 in Thailand, it is very common that your children are paying all your bills. They're making sure you got a place to live. They're making sure you got food. They're you know, sending you money. We had people in our church in Maryland, this Thai lady, Mrs. Coffee, her last name was Coffee. She married a man that was his last name. And she'd send money to folks in Thailand every month. Not uncommon at all. Is that in the Philippines, do they do that quite a lot, Dale? Yeah. For some reason, our culture, I think maybe we're too greedy or whatever, we just don't do that. But they did. So the word honor, it has to do with provision. In Acts chapter 6 and verse 1, turn there with me, Acts chapter 6 and verse 1, we'll see it again. And in Acts chapter 6 and verse 1, it says, the number of the disciples was multiplied, and there rose murmuring of the Grecians against the Hebrews because their widows were neglected in the daily ministration. The church was providing for widows that were widows indeed. We're going to get to that. If I probably won't have time today, but we'll finish it up next week. It is clear that they were meeting the provision, the financial needs of some older folks, especially some older ladies. And it seems, if you go back to 1 Timothy chapter 5 and verse 3, he says, honor widows that are widows indeed. That word honor there doesn't just mean, well, tell them that they're good people or recognize them for being wonderful human beings or whatever. It means take care of them. Honor thy father and thy mother means take care of them. Meet their needs. Make sure they're provided for. They did that for you for a long time, and so that's a responsibility. So he says, if any widow have children, verse 4, or nephews, let them learn first to show piety at home and to requite their parents, for that is good and acceptable before God. And so what he says there is, if there is a widow who has no children, their brother or sister had children, however, they were supposed to take care of her, in verse 4. The word piety is reverence or veneration for one who's a senior. To requite is to repay somebody for what they have done. A child is responsible for the care of his parents, and it sounds to me like also of his aunts and uncles if they didn't have any children. We don't even think about that today. People are too busy building their own wealth. Look at verse 5. Now, she that is a widow indeed and desolate trusteth in God and continueth in supplications and prayers night and day. But she that liveth in pleasure is dead while she liveth. That's some tough language to understand there. Timothy is told how to identify a widow who should be provided for by the church. I'm at the bottom of page 1. She's desolate. That word means she doesn't have a companion. She is trusting in God because she doesn't have anybody else that she can trust in. She continueth in supplications and prayers night and day. Turn to page 2. So there's this group of women that are widows, and those are the responsibility of the church. Do we take that seriously? We need to. But there are some other people, and they are the responsibility of their children and their nieces and their nephews. And how serious is he about this? How important is it? He says in verse 8, if any provide not for his own, especially for those of his own house, he hath denied the faith and is worse than an infidel. What is an infidel? An unbeliever. That's strong language. If you don't do this, he says, you're worse than someone that rejects Christ. How serious is God about this? So God has a plan, doesn't he, for older folks? And today, like many other things like God has plans for, we have rejected them and just don't pay attention to it anymore. But we have that responsibility. And it ought to be, you know, in my case, for example, my parents, while they were living, they were able to provide for themselves. And there was a point in time where when my dad got Alzheimer's, I told him, I said, if you want, you can come live here in Maryland and we'll take care of you. And we would have. And my stepmother decided to go live near her children instead. And that's fine. They made that choice. But we are supposed to take care of our parents. And that's just simple Bible. So real quick, let me just finish this handout and then we'll move on to some more things next week. He says that if they don't do this, they're worse than an infidel if they refuse to provide for their own. Now here's a pattern in verses 9 through 13, and we'll hit this kind of quick. He tells them, who is this? And he's very specific. He says, let not a widow be taken into the number. And then he gives some requirements. They've got to be 60 years old. They should be the wife of one man. They should be known for their good works. For example, they should be willing to lodge strangers. They should serve the saints, relieve the afflicted, diligently following good works. They should not be, verse 11, a younger widow. Verse 12, one who will set faith aside. Verse 13, one who is idle. Or verse 13, one who is a tattler or a busybody. Let me read the verses. He says in verse 9, let a widow be taken into the number under 80 years old, having been the wife of one man, well reported of for good works. If she have brought up children, if she have lodged strangers, if she have washed the saints' feet, if she have relieved the afflicted, if she have diligently followed every good work. But the younger widows refuse, for when they have begun to wax wanton against Christ, they will marry. Still, some very strong language there. That is someone that is going to have to choose between faith and other things, and they choose other things instead. Having damnation because they've cast off their first faith. Withal, they learn to be idle. He describes what they're going to be like, wandering from house to house. They're tattlers or busybodies, speaking things they ought not. And so he tells in verse 14 what they should be doing. He says, I will require the younger women marry, bear children, guide the house, give none occasion to the adversary to speak reproachfully, for some are already turned aside after Satan. If any man or woman that believeth have widows, let them relieve them. And let not the church be charged, that it may relieve them that are widows indeed. So God's got a plan for providing for the elderly, the widows especially, parents, and it should be done first of all by their family, and if they have no family, then the church ought to step in. And I will say, I know of at least one person who's a member of our church, Brenda White, who is definitely a needy person. And we ought to try to make sure we meet her needs as we can. And sadly, she's got some close relatives that could do that. But if they're not going to, then we should. Amen? And it's just a fascinating passage to me because God's so precise in the way he says this. Let me read my conclusion and we'll be done. The Lord is very specific about the role of young women. And he tells what they should be doing in verse 14. And the seriousness of the matter when they disregard that role. And we didn't talk about that a whole lot. That's another category here of what the young women should be doing. But he does reiterate that believers are responsible to provide for, that is to relieve widows. And if they have family, they should do it. If not, the church should do it and relieve those that are widows indeed. And so God has a plan to care for the elderly. And you don't hear a lot about this, do you? But it's definitely in the Bible. Let's all stand and be dismissed in a word of prayer.